Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Ringside Wrap, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. This is where Rich Tate, Les Thatcher, and Mike Sempervivi bring you the latest news and information on pro wrestling and MMA, as well as interviews with legends of yesterday and stars of today. And now, the GWH Radio Network presents Ringside Wrap with your hosts, Rich Tate, Les Thatcher, and Mike Sempervivi.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Ringside Wrap. Glad to be with you again this week. No less this week, at least for right now. He's ducking tornadoes, but we've got the always dependable Mike Sempervivi. Mike, how you doing with tonight?
Not too bad. I kind of scared you a little bit there, didn't I?
You did. You know, I don't know. It does get a little nerve wracking. You know, here's the thing. It's really kind of hard to get all three of us on the phone during the crazy spring season a lot because, well, hell, we get tornadoes here like nobody's business. And then, of course, if we're not getting them, it's usually up in Les's area. So a little bit crazy weather during the spring. And do want to send out our best wishes to anybody who's still suffering and still looking for help from the stuff from Georgia and Alabama, and of course the people out in the Plain States now. Obviously, some tragic stuff happening this week there as well. Mike, it's been kind of a crazy week. I didn't know what the top story was going to be coming in, just based on stuff going on over the weekend. But then Friday, obviously, some tragic news coming out of Florida. And then, of course, some stuff we kind of teased last week with Ring of Honor that happened on Saturday. I'll let you take the ball and run with it.
Well, I think still the biggest thing right now is Randy Savage. The Observer and Figure Four weekly newsletters came out this just today. I'm not sure if the torch is out or not, but certainly the Observer and the Figure Four are. And you know, it's still, everybody's still in shock, you know, after Randy Savage's, you know, the car wreck, and it just, it's still amazing, and it's still amazing the reaction that the whole thing had gotten to. I mean, it was, you know, I'd heard about it, I was at work, but I didn't really have a chance to check into it anymore or anything like that, and then when I got home and turned on the TV on ESPN News, there was, you know, where they had the, in the bottom left corner of the screen where it says, you know, UFC or NFL or MLB on their bottom line, it was just Macho Man. It was just, wow. And the more I thought about it over the weekend, and, you know, I talked a lot about this on the Observer Live show on Sunday with Brian, where basically the whole show, just you couldn't help but not talk about Randy Savage, and because there were so many aspects, and for somebody who's my age, and I'm 35 years old, Brian's 36, and Richard, a mighty bit older, and not much there, but, I mean, we got a chance to see, you know, Savage at his peak, and you didn't, at least for me, and this seems to be the sentiment of a lot of people that coming out of this, is you didn't really realize how much you were impacted by him, and you didn't really realize the reach that he had. And the fact that he was a household name, everything, well, you know, people know Hulk Hogan, and that's true, but it's amazing standing back and the amount of people who knew Randy Savage, even those who didn't like wrestling. I mean, people who knew I liked wrestling or coming up to me, I'm sorry about that. I had no idea you would never even guess, but they knew who Macho Man Randy Savage was, and it's just amazing. Even today, you know, we're coming up on almost a week of it now. It's just at least amazing to me how influenced I was by the guy and how much of his career I had to see and how amazing he actually was.
You know, you talk about the reach he had and the fact that it was on ESPN. Here's the thing. I remember being a fan of Randy's work and thinking he was great and everything, but he was never – I guess I kind of underestimated his reach, because I was really kind of taken aback when even my wife knew who he was. She doesn't follow this stuff. She knew who they were talking about. People at work that I would never have thought would know anybody beyond a Hulk Hogan talking about it. And of course, you know, my God, it was everywhere. It was mainstream press. It was really kind of crazy seeing that, because I was thinking, okay, this is the kind of stuff that I would have thought might have been reserved for a Hulk Hogan because of the mainstream reach he had. I never would have imagined Savage having that, but I guess I really underestimated it. And I don't know if that's a knock on Hogan or a knock on me or what, but obviously, yeah, major tragedy, major talent lost. And, you know, here's the thing, too. He's driving, I guess, their Jeep, and his wife's in the vehicle with him. You know, it could have been her, too. And as sad as you think it might be, you know, being married, obviously, both of us, I can't imagine walking away from an accident like that knowing my wife is not going to, you know. Obviously just horrible,
especially
horrible
when you're without a scratch.
Exactly. And you know, but how lucky is she, you know, because they went through oncoming traffic, slammed into a tree. You know, what are the odds that you're going to make it through that without some major injury coming out of it, or at least, you know?
And I didn't realize this. I didn't, you know, because obviously Savage, he didn't need money, saved his money, was very protective. You know, and again, you can go into, I mean, there's so many stories about Randy Savage, too, and intricacies and craziness and just stories about Randy Savage you can go into. But, you know, he was very protective of being the Macho Man Randy Savage, so he didn't. He was concerned with how he looked and all that stuff, so he was able to stay, you know, stay at home, and he had his money and all of that, and he never had to come back. I'm amazed by that, and the fact that I guess it seems like he was able to find peace, because I didn't know that his wife now was the same one he had when he was trying out, you know, for the St. Louis Cardinals and in the farm system, and how, you know, and obviously all of the stories with Elizabeth and what has happened to her and just his whole story and how everything kind of, as tragic as this is, how it kind of came around where he was with the person that he was with and had found a love, and again, another tragedy in that they just had celebrated their first wedding anniversary not long before this. But again, if there was something to come out of this, is it's the circle that he seemed to make to have peace and comfort and happiness for a guy who was always restless, seemingly.
Absolutely. I want to point out, too, you mentioned it earlier but didn't go too far into it. Anybody out there that's listening, if you're an old-school fan and maybe you're just not into the new stuff that we do cover here a lot, but you are a Randy Savage fan, go out and get the Observer if you don't. At least get this one issue that came out today. Fantastic work, as always, by Dave Meltzer. If I'm not mistaken, I think it was probably about half of this week's issue dedicated to Randy Savage. Good reading.
And I'm really, it's too bad, Les, hopefully he can join us later on. It's too bad that he's not with us right now. Because of, you know, there's more talk about, you know, what ICW was now, you know, than ever before, because, you know, a lot of the clips are on YouTube, or not a lot of them, but there's many ICW clips, whereas there's not a whole lot of ghoulish ones. So, I mean, you know what ICW was in the introduction of that show, which, you know, you look at that and then you look at ECW, you know, some 15, 20 years later, and it's just like, you know, it's amazing. And just, you know, Les is one of the only ones, and we talked about it a little bit when I brought it up to him, and, you know, obviously him being in competition with them, it was, you know, he just said it's how terrible it was for Lexington and for that area and everything. But I tell you, it's an amazing piece of lore, and it's too bad he's not here, because, you know, there's not a whole lot of guys who talk about that time and then, you know, who were really in the mix of that time. And I did want to ask him some stuff tonight about that, because that's, And again, that's another, if the Observer or, listen to stories from guys who have talked about that era, and there's a lot of them out there who've done shoot interviews and the like, where they've talked a little bit about working there and how violent and how insanely crazy it was. And, and I think there's people that probably who are, grew up in New York or L.A., or they have no clue, how rabid and how nasty it was in Lexington, Kentucky, when ICW was battling the Jarretts and battling the Welches and all that. It's just, it's incredible. He had an absolutely remarkable, incredible voyage in his life with the places he had to go and the things that he saw and wanting to be a baseball player. And just, it really is it's too bad. And Savage never did a shoot interview. He never told all those stories, and it's too bad. It really is too bad.
I wanted to point out something that I found kind of interesting too. On Friday afternoon, a news talk station that I listened to, the last people you would think would ever do this sort of thing, they actually mentioned the passing of Randy Savage, and then the whole crew on air. Basically, they handed out Slim Jims, and the whole crew basically snapped into a Slim Jim. I found that pretty funny. So, people you would even least think would be knowledgeable. They're passing around Slim Jims in the booth. Obviously, the other big story of the week, at least in my opinion, Ring of Honor, back on TV. Your thoughts
in some areas.
yeah. Your thoughts on the deal?
I gotta be honest. I'm not per se a fan of Sinclair Broadcasting. I'll say this. I grew up in the Baltimore, Washington area, so I always had access to one of their first stations, or one of the stronger ones is Channel 54. And Richard, do you remember Super TV?
No.
Okay, it's kind of a cable alternative where it was just like a box on top of the TV, and they played like Cinemax type porn overnight, or not porn, but that softcore, TNA type goopy stuff. And I remember North Dallas 40 was on there. They just played movies, and I guess it was kind of going to be a cable alternative, an HBO type of thing. And it didn't pan out. And when that died off in the Baltimore, Washington area, at least, Channel 54, WMUV-TV, had a hell of a signal, and I mean a hell of a signal, very, very powerful for a UHF station, beamed into, you got it in Philly, on good days, obviously, but in D.C., the signal was strong. It was a very strong station, and they played a lot of wrestling. They played a lot of wrestling. I was lucky. There was Channel 45, and a lot of other stations played stuff, too, but 45 and 54, both of which are now owned by Sinclair in Baltimore, and Channel 50 in Washington, D.C., which is another Super TV station, they would play. There was wrestling on every day on Channel 50, and they played, all those stations played a ton of wrestling, so I'm partial. I can say I'm partial to the channels that are going to be on the Baltimore area. But Sinclair is kind of they are very right-leaning. They don't really go out of their way to try to do anything otherwise. They've done some controversial things, and they've done some things to make themselves stand out, which has put them at odds sometimes with their affiliates. But they are in a lot of the areas that ROH runs, in the Baltimore area, and they have stations in Buffalo, and obviously Toronto has been good to ROH, and they're in, some markets where ROH, could use some help. And we've talked about it over time with ROH, where they lost a lot of their base, for a million and one reasons. And then they've done an incredible job over the last couple of years of doing awesome stuff. And Lagana deserves credit. Cornette deserves credit. The guys who are actually doing the stuff. Kevin Kelly, everybody deserves credit. And, what's gone on with HDNet and the whole feud between Generico and Steen and the Kings of Wrestling and the Briscoes. And it's just, they've done so much awesome stuff. It was sad that they lost their TV, but they were building back, buzz again. They were building back through good efforts like that. A lot of good good feeling and good morale. Now, what they needed to help with that is to try to bring back the fan base more and the paid attendance. And obviously, having these shows on may spark people into seeing it and may spark a new fan, you know, into watching it. And I know people are being cynical right now about the deal, and yeah, it's just what we do, you know, right off the bat is be cynical. But, you know, if they can run a spot show in Des Moines or something, I mean, or like a Madison, Wisconsin, you know, they're going to go to Chicago, they're going to go to Toronto. Imagine if they could run Madison, Wisconsin and do, you know, and make some money, you know, and just continue to build. And I think it's as good of an option as any. It really is as good of an option as any, because you go, oh, okay, what if they were on a cable channel? There's a million cable channels. And, you know, HDNet's being picked up all over the place. But ask the average person off the top of your head, what channel is it? You know, you don't really know. But you do tend to know your local ones still, you know,
right.
Because those stations even on cable are, if you had, you know, Christ, channel, I don't know what they are down there, Rich. You know, I don't know what SB is or something like that. But, you know, your channel 5 is going to be your Fox in D.C., it's channel 5, it's channel 5 on your, it was always channel 5, and now it's channel 5 on your cable, and it's just, it could help. I really think it actually will help that way. Now, will it have the same impact and buzz that the HDNet show did? I don't know if it will or not, but odds are more people are going to be able to see it this way, because in the markets it's not in, they're going to open it up for everybody to be able to watch online, or, you know, enough markets where people can actually watch it online. And as long as the quality of what they've been doing doesn't drop, I feel good about this. Now, again, it's not owned by a guy who has got a passion for it, you know, and you know, Kerry Sulkin, who, you know, put a lot of his money into it and, you know, was seeing the thing out, and, you know, so it's now it's owned by a, you know, a TV company, and we've seen how that's turned out before. But, you know, again, if it starts losing money, they'll probably dump it, and who knows what could happen, or they sell it off to somebody or something like that. And, you know, realistically, at that point, if that were to happen, I think Ring of Honor would just be dead anyway. You know, I think they're going to, you know, if it gets sold off again here in the next 5 years or something like that, I think by that point, if that has to happen, then, you know, it's too much beyond repair, I would say. And, you know, those guys would go elsewhere. But, you know, I really think this is as good of an option as any. And I think there's real promise, especially it's just, for me, it's the promise on being able to run a show and make money running that show in that town. More than the TV show, more than any of that stuff, I think that's, to me, the big thing.
Yeah, you know, just looking at the markets that Sinclair is in, obviously they're not in Atlanta, so I'm a little disgruntled about that. But from what I understand, in the early information that was coming out, if you're not in an area where Sinclair owns a channel, I guess what they were talking about doing was trying to get syndication on channels and stations in markets that they're not currently in.
Well,
do you understand that to be correct?
Yes. And okay. Richie, do you have the Comcast Sports Network down there, right?
Yeah, we do. I'm actually on AT&T U-verse, but yeah, we have that system here.
Oh, okay. Well, because, you know, there's, like, the Comcast channel in a lot of places, and for hockey over the last couple of years, you know, there's been a big tie-in of, like, San Jose Sharks. I see a lot of San Jose Sharks games being basically in a Caps Flyers market, which are, you know, they have the Comcast channel. So, you know, you see Caps games in Chicago, and we see a lot of Blackhawks and Sharks games and you know, vice versa, and Philadelphia and all that sort of stuff. But on that channel, the Overload show from WFX, I think it was taped in British Columbia, come on there. A couple of fight shows, and then Showtime All-Star Wrestling actually comes on there, has started coming back on there, which I'd love for someone to call in and talk about Showtime All-Star Wrestling, just so someone could actually tell me if anyone has ever turned themselves in from Grumpy's Bail Bonds when they do those spots on that show. Have you seen that show?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. My Lord. Although this is, then again, this is what I love about wrestling. But, you know, they could take that and do what they're, you know, and get on it and sell this off for cheaper programming, to be aired at 10, 11 o'clock at night on a Saturday, you know, to other stations and to other, you know, into things like that. So I think, you know, obviously they didn't buy it for no reason. They didn't buy it as a toy. They didn't buy it. They bought it because they think there's a possibility for them to have this TV product that they can tour around with and make some money. And
well, sure. Well, sure. I mean, let's face it. HDNet, they were really limited in reach. I think this probably maybe grows their reach, if I'm not mistaken. And on top of that, you've got the fact that really, either without TV or if they stayed on HDNet, it was just going to be status quo. There was only so much growth they were going to be allowed to at least attempt or have. And this way, it's at least, it's the potential for further growth of the company. Or, as you mentioned, if it sinks, they're pretty much done.
And I'm going to stereotype wrestling fans. You ready for this?
Go ahead.
Rich?
Go ahead.
Okay, now most of the stations that are owned by Sinclair are CW affiliates.
Mm-hmm.
My network affiliates.
Right.
Really, those are the ones I'm talking about. Oh, right, you know what? I'm Fox affiliates, too. Okay?
Yeah.
Now, what usually airs? Now, you do on Fox, you do have your morning news. They usually require that. You get your 10 o'clock news. They require that. They got a couple of made shows that they have. But take those out of the equation for a minute on Fox and the actual network programming. And you take what's left of the programming on Fox and on my network TV and on the CW. For the most part, what is it? Judge Judy. You know.
Yeah.
Those types of shows, you know, I don't know if Texas Justice is still on, but, you know, the divorce court style and that type of mindless programming on the weekend, it's a lot of infomercials, lots of usually craptastic reruns, you know, unless they're Fox affiliates where they get Simpsons and things like that, but it's a lot of that sort of kind of mindless nonsense. And to be honest, you know, it's not a bad market to aim at to get impressionable people and to get people that just, you know, that it, you know, Ring of Honor and all professional wrestling. I mean, pro wrestling wasn't on many NBC affiliates, you know, back in the day. I mean, they were on, like I was saying, on syndicated stations, and they were just, and I'm not trying to put anybody down or anything like that because I watched wrestling, I like watching a lot of those shows, but, you know, I think you can tap that market, which is a new market for what Ring of Honor has, and somebody may go, holy shit, look at that guy do that, and want to go and see them, and that's because a lot of times wrestling fans are like, oh, no, they're still not going to draw here because, you know, my friends who don't go, we gave up on it. Well, you're not the only ones in the town. And I think they could. And again, you can tap those people. Look, a lonely kid who's 15 and is not going out on a Saturday night or something like that, I mean, you know, it's still, they're going to watch TV. You know, because people are like, yeah, I've heard people complain about the time slot, and, well, it might be on at 10 o'clock or 11 o'clock on a Saturday night or, you know, afternoon on Saturdays. You know, even though we watched it when we were little, it couldn't work now. Why not? there's still kids inside watching TV the same way we did. I mean, it's just, people are kind of throwing a lot of arrows at it, but I think it's, you know, to me, it's not like the Evolve concept, but it's like Ring of Honor or HDNet or Evolve or stuff like where people want to jump on it and hammer it so hard into the ground so early, and it's like, I think we should all give this a shot because this could be really good. Now, it may not be anything, but I think it's something to be positive about in a month where we've got TNA's restart for the 9,536th time.
Well, the hardcore fans are always going to be screaming anytime there's the slightest bit change from what they've known. You know, let's face it, it's...
I love that. Wrestling on a Saturday, and people are pissed. Man.
Yeah, the way it used to be. You know, I mean, here's the thing. If you're a Ring of Honor fan and you're hardcore and you date back all the way to the beginning of the promotion, you should see this as a plus. It's only a plus because bottom line is, it could only float at status quo for so long. You know,
as much as
everybody loves what they do, if it doesn't at some point, I mean, if you're putting money into something, you want to at least be making back what you're spending. I don't know the financial status of Kerry Sulkin and Ring of Honor and whatnot, but I got to think that it was probably barely a break-even operation. And at least this way, there's the potential to actually make money with this thing. So, you know, let's look at it as maybe Kerry gets out, and at this point he's no longer going to be putting his own money in it. He's actually maybe going to make some money from it. Now, the only downside is, as you said, if Sinclair is not making money with this thing, they're probably going to dump it within a year. But the thing is, it was probably going to get dumped at some point anyway, because if Kerry sold it at this point, who's to say he wasn't going to sell it a year from now if he didn't have the TV deal? You know?
Oh, yeah. And
it may have gone to the all kind of wrong people, or he may have just closed up shop and said to hell with it. So at least now you've still got a chance for this thing to keep going if it grows.
And see it on TV, because where do those guys go if they leave? They go to PWG, which is a fun promotion in California, but they're still DVD sales, you know, and they
right. Don't
run iPay-per-views. And there's the other thing, too. If they're doing pretty good right now, and it's not something they can survive on, they keep having to amp it up if they were to not have TV at all. You know, the iPay-per-views, if they're doing good, and say the last one at WrestleMania that weekend, 2,500 buys each night or whatever. So like, let's say their average is now 2,000 buys. If they just get 500 more people from all of these affiliates to buy the show, I mean that's a big hit for them. It's like, you know, it's obviously it's not, you know, Vince McMahon, you know, Monopoly guy is skipping around to go type money, but still, I mean, it would be, you know, 500 more buys, and it's just, everyone should be happy about this in this aspect, no matter how they feel about it, if they're wary about it or anything, because somebody felt like investing in pro wrestling, and
right. That's
where it's like, you know, WWE obviously is, you know, they got theirs, and Chikara's got an awesome little niche carved out. PWG's got a little niche carved out, but they're not going to be on TV. Evolve's got a niche. Dragon Gate, look, if Dragon Gate couldn't get on G4 or something like that, and I still think they could, but, you know, if that should have happened, it should have happened probably a couple years ago, but, you know, that type of stuff, it's not, I'd like to see Dragon Gate on TV, but then again, I'd rather see Dragon Gate Japan on TV, but it's, I don't think it would have the legs of a Ring of Honor that Ring of Honor can. And Gabe would hate to hear that. I know he's on last week, but I think, you know, for the American wrestling fan, Ring of Honor still is going to trump Dragon Gate, I think, for most of them, even though, you know, I think Dragon Gate can build. But this is outside WWE and TNA, and TNA is what it is. I mean, this is good. And TNA is not making any money. You know, it's only WWE, so it's just everybody, if you like wrestling or sports entertainment or whatever you want to call it, you have to be at least kind of holding your fingers, unless you're Gabe, obviously, you want to see ROH die, you know, and he's got his, you know, what he feels are legitimate reasons, and I don't know, I'm not there, so I'm not going to get involved, but, you know, everybody except for Gabe should be happy about the possibilities of this. And if nothing else, if you like the guys who, you know, Jim Cornette and Delirious and those guys, now they're getting a paycheck signed by somebody else, which is cool. And maybe, hopefully, maybe they get some medical benefits out of it too, since they're working for a broadcast company, and that would be even better.
All right, we've hit that time. Let's go take a break, and we'll be back here in just a few.
Hi, everyone. This is Reba McEntire for RAD. You know, I see a lot of funny things traveling all over this beautiful country of ours, but one thing that's not very funny is when someone gets in a car trying to drive when they're drunk. Take their keys away from them, because friends don't let friends drive drunk.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
in 1977 in Johannesburg, South Africa. An 8-year-old boy picked up the game of golf from his father. By the age of 9, he was already outplaying him. The odds of that same boy then making it to the US and European pro golf tours? 1 in 7 million. The odds of the Big Easy winning the Open Championship once and the US Open Championship twice? 1 in 780 million. The odds of this professional golfer having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 110. Ernie Els encourages you to learn the signs of autism at autismspeaks.org. Early diagnosis can make a lifetime of difference. Autism Speaks. It's time to listen. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
You're listening to the GWH Radio Network, brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Your show will return momentarily. Did you know that there's more to GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com than just Georgia Wrestling History? It's true. Not only can you find documented cards, results, and more on pro wrestling in Georgia dating back to the 19th century, but you can also find out where live and local wrestling may be near you today, and not just in Georgia. We also cover the southeastern regional scene in Alabama, Florida, Tennessee, and the Carolinas. You want more? Well, we also cover the major worldwide wrestling and MMA promotions as well, including WWE, UFC, TNA, Strikeforce, Ring of Honor, and more. And so do our radio shows. You can find all of this, and maybe a bit more, by logging on to GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com, where we are capturing the legends of yesterday and covering the stars of today. GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com.
To be a good father is the most important job in a man's life, but it doesn't have to be hard. Play catch, go to a park or visit a zoo, help your child with their homework, sit down together for dinner, ask them how their day was. Things get busy, and sometimes we all fall short, but the smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life. Take time to be a dad today.
Learn more at 1-877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov.
Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Back on Ringside Wrap, we're joined by our guest, J.J. Dillon. J.J., welcome back to the show.
Hey, Rich, how are you? Good to be on with you.
Yeah. Wanted to get you on just to see if we could catch up with you, but also this past weekend, obviously big weekend in Amsterdam, the annual Hall of Fame induction ceremony. Wanted to get your take on the event this year and how it went.
Well, actually, because of something personal, I had a son who was graduating from high school, so that was in Georgia, and so I actually flew up to Amsterdam on Friday to enjoy as much of the festivities as possible and to see some of the guys. And of course, that was kind of tempered with the sad news of the passing of Randy Savage. The word spread rather quickly, but
sure.
I enjoyed. Paul Ellering, I hadn't seen Paul in over 20 years and had a chance to spend quite a bit of time with him and you know, catch up on all that was going on. And I hadn't seen Billy Robinson in probably 30 years. So that's really what I enjoy most about the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame function, and this was number 10, and I know they wanted it to be special, and it was. Ivan Koloff saw Ivan Koloff. Mark Lewin came in, saw Mark. Danny Hodge was there. Just a collection of real legends, and to be in a relaxed atmosphere like that and have that private time is, to me, is priceless.
Hi, JJ. Mike Sempervivi here, too. And I heard you on the Figure Four Weekly show with Brian Alvarez and talking about the Cauliflower Alley Club as well, and how it almost seems imperative that, you know, guys, you know, you get it. You never know when things are going to happen. Obviously, the Savage example is another tragic case of it. But you were talking about having to see Humperdinck and the chance of seeing guys, you know, who you haven't seen for a while, catching up and keeping that brotherhood going. You know, it seems like now more than ever, it needs to be done. And it seems to be like these events keep growing and growing a little bit larger and larger every year. And for a guy that's had a chance to go to him for quite some time, how do you feel about just the continued embrace of still wrestling fans out there? It seems to be guys more than ever are getting together and showing up at these things. And really, it seems to be a very incredibly nice experience for a fan to be a part of and to get close to. But for what is it like for you guys, and how important is it, do you feel, that guys should do this or get together?
Well, Mike, I think it's very, very important. But, you know, I know from my own personal experience, and I started actually going to the Mobile reunion, which is a closed reunion. There's no fans there. And I didn't spend a lot of my career in the Deep South, but I went there and had such a great time. And then I was told, well, you know, you need to go to Cauliflower Alley, and it's one of those things that there always seemed to be a convenient reason why I had missed it. I either didn't circle the date or there was something else important going on, and the challenge really is getting somebody there for the first time and actually having the experience, and at least that's what happened to me. And once I was there, in my case with Cauliflower Alley Club, Bob Orton Sr. was a star in the business when I first started watching as a fan in the mid-late 50s. And I didn't see him other than watching him as a fan for, many, many years later, probably 20 years later, when I came to Amarillo, and it was the last territory he worked. So I got to live there, be around him and his family, be in the dressing room with him every night. And, you know, he was one of the legends. Art Nelson was there at the time. And then he and Art both left and went to Vegas. And so now another 20 years or more transpires, and I finally get to my first Cauliflower Alley Club, and I'm just kind of soaking it all in, and which happens often too. You see somebody, and the face kind of looks familiar, but you're not sure who it is, and you're going through your mind trying to figure it out. And I finally ask somebody, I know that, but who is it? That's Bob Orton Sr. Oh, heavens! And went over and spent time with him. And when the function was over, 2 months later, he passed away. So I'm thinking, you know, had I not been there, had I not seen him at that time, look what I would have missed out on. So that's what has drawn me to come back every year. And sadly, that story has repeated itself many times over, you know, be it Playboy Gary Hart, Sir Oliver Humperdinck, Dewey Robertson. The list of names just goes on and on. And the same thing with the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame. They're both, I think of them as sister organizations. They're not in competition with each other. They both support each other. Even though Cauliflower Alley's this year, I think, was number 46 and for their reunion, and this was the 10th for Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame, so they're in their infancy. But it was a fabulous time up there. Tony Villano encouraged the town to get involved. They had a street fair. And a lot going on, and they realize how many people the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame draws into the community for this induction thing. So for me personally, I like to think that I take away much, much more than I give, and I do get to interact with the fans, and I've never, ever stopped being a fan and never stopped taking every opportunity when I see the fans to be able to one-on-one say thank you for supporting me during my career and helping me, you know, make it to whatever level of success that I reached, and just for supporting the wrestling business. I always said the wrestling fans are the greatest fans in the world.
You know, it's been kind of a big year, I guess, for the Road Warriors and Paul Ellering now going into this Hall of Fame, as well as the WWE just a couple months ago. How is Paul Ellering doing? Because I know for a while it just seems like he wasn't really wanting anything to do with the business.
Well, Paul is a very intelligent guy. He saved his money. He always was an avid outdoorsman. He now owns a bar restaurant on one of the lakes up there in Minnesota and doing extremely well. He has competed in and finished the Iditarod endurance run up in Alaska three different times. So he's got a great story to tell, and he seemed genuinely excited to be back among friends that he hadn't seen for a long time. So some guys they tend to drift away and have life after the business, and you never know what's in the back of a guy's mind. You know, if he has some resentment for the business because it is very demanding. It encompasses your whole life, as we've discussed it, these things, all the time that we spend on the road, 7 days a week, often week in and week out, going months without a day off, and missing a lot of events with our family because of the demands of the business. And when it's all over, a lot of guys that maybe didn't save their money look back and think, you know, it was all a blur. What did I really do with my life?
Mike?
Well, up there, this, talking about Paul Ellring, and did you hear a story for the first time, or hear a story that you hadn't heard in a long time that you could talk about, or just something that you learned? Like you said, you're still a fan. What did you take from this, as far as, did you hear something or something that you walked away, it's like, wow, I didn't know that, or I hadn't heard that for ages?
Well, it wasn't so much at the Hall of Fame in Amsterdam this year. Again, I came in on Friday. There's a private banquet just for the guys Friday, and that's always very, very enjoyable. Tony Villano, you know, always has a sponsor to pick up the tab for that, and it's usually at a really nice restaurant. And then there's a meet and greet function for a very small nominal amount that people can just go down the line and get something signed by everyone, and that money all goes to help the hall. So I was able to stay there for the private banquet, for the meet and greet, and then I had to go to the airport to catch a flight to Georgia to be with my son for his high school graduation and miss out on the actual banquet. But to answer your question, you know, this year at Cauliflower Alley, one of the people that they honored was Sergeant Slaughter. And I had been around the Sarge quite a bit. I think I only worked with him one time, as I was looking back through my record books. We went on a tour of Kuwait with that the Crockett's took a group over there for a week, and it's really actually the only time that I was ever in the ring with him. But I worked around for the 7.5 years or so that I was with what was then the World Wrestling Federation. I work with Sarge a lot, and a lot of times you think you get to know someone, and when he was honored with his speech, and Rowdy Piper did a fabulous job of introducing the Sarge, and Sarge talked about how he broke into the business and up in Minnesota, and a lot of detail about that time of his life. And these were stories that I had never heard before, and it was a side of Bob Remus, Sergeant Slaughter, that I had never heard before. And I always had respect for him professionally and as a person, but and Terry Funk and I had this same conversation. I mean, we both just were in awe of the dues that the guy paid to get into the business, and he's a genuinely... we used to call in the business a salty guy that, could take care of himself. And you never really saw that side of Sergeant Slaughter, at least I hadn't. So that's probably the most current example of going to one of these functions and seeing a guy, a side of a guy that you thought you knew, that really opened your eyes.
You know, that story is a good example, too, of something Les often talks about here. He'll get asked a lot on this show or others that he's on or through email or whatever, did he know so-and-so, or what stories can he tell him about so-and-so? And he's like, you know, the thing is, what people don't realize is back when there were like 30 territories just in the U.S., it was rare that you really didn't work with everybody because you were, you know, you may be in this territory and you know, you're kind of hopping around the country in a different kind of rotation than somebody else is. And even though both of you may have a 20, 30-year career, your paths may never have crossed at all.
So, yeah, that's true. That is very much true. Or sometimes it might be a week or so on a Japan tour. That would be a chance meeting of being around a guy that you knew about and was were aware of the success of his career. But like you say, just a situation where your paths had never crossed.
Right. Or even, you know, the case of baby facing a heel because they worked so hard to keep you guys apart back in those days. You know, you could be in the same territory for 3 months, but if you're on this in the different locker room, you may never actually talk to these guys.
Yeah, that's true too. But you know, and I always encourage fans to get involved with Cauliflower Alley Club because it's a thing not only for the guys, but it's great for the fans too, and especially with the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame because it's a growing organization, and the fact that it's the only brick-and-mortar Hall of Fame that we have, and that's not to disparage anybody else, but it's just it's a fabulous thing, and I've tried to describe it and really can't describe it. You have to go there, and I always encourage every wrestling fan, as I would a baseball fan, that you know you always have to at least sometime go to Cooperstown, New York, to the Baseball Hall of Fame. Well, every wrestling fan's got to find a way to get up to Amsterdam and just to see for yourself what is there with the displays of memorabilia and the old posters and pictures. And it's just a phenomenal place. And there aren't, I don't know of anything else that's like that, that really is something that's helping preserve our history.
Yeah, funny you should mention the Baseball Hall of Fame. Just here in a few years, obviously a few Braves are going to be going in, so I'll be heading up to Cooperstown with my son. And I was definitely planning on making the side trip up to Amsterdam from there.
Yeah, it's about an hour, maybe an hour drive or less. But if you go to my website, jjdillon.com, I have a link to both Cauliflower Alley Club and the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame where it's convenient to get there and, you know, to see what the organization is all about and how it's structured. And like I say, the two of them are very supportive of each other. And also, you know, when you go to the main page, my autobiography is there, and it was not sold in bookstores, so it's something I'm very proud of since it was published in 2005 by my co-author Scott Teal, and he's a great author and a respected historian, and really, you know, captured my life story, which I think is very unique, and put it into words to preserve for all time. So I'm very proud of wrestlers like Seagulls. And if you go to jjdillon.com, you can read the reviews about the book, which kind of tells it all, and also have a convenient link to Cauliflower Alley Club and the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame.
Sure, absolutely. One of the best books, at least one of my top five. Mike, we didn't have JJ on. You weren't on with us when we had JJ on before. I'm sure you've probably got a few questions you may want to hit him up with.
Oh, absolutely. And actually, in the vein of the Wrestling Hall of Fame, have you been asked to donate, or have you donated anything from the past that you have put in there, or that, hey, if you've been asked to donate anything to put in or to be put on display?
Well, Tony Villano's philosophy has always been that whatever that you're willing to give there to be displayed is and always will remain yours. It's just on loan to be displayed at the hall. So it's not like your guys are giving up something. And I know after Moolah passed away, her daughter came up there and presented to the hall the original belt that Moolah had won like 50 years before that. It was there's just some really, really unique stuff. And it crosses, it's not tied to any one of the organizations. You'll see things there from the WWF/WWE, from TNA, from Ring of Honor, from Independence, and it's the superstars of our business, if there is such a word, to the guys that were journeymen that made their living in the business. So you see all kinds of things, from boots and ring jackets and capes and masks and what have you. And I didn't have one of the original Four Horsemen jacket, but somebody had made one up for me. He actually made two of them up years later that were identical to the original jackets that we wore back in the 80s, and I did present one of them to the hall along with a copy of my autobiography, and I also had one appearance in Madison Square Garden. It was one of my lifelong dreams going back to when I was a kid. That, you know, I thought, boy, wouldn't it be great someday? I mean, there are bigger arenas, probably. I don't know that there is a more famous arena. When you say the Garden, and to any wrestling fan, they know you're not talking about Maple Leaf Gardens or Boston Gardens. You're talking about Madison Square Garden, even though the physical location has changed a couple times. I mean, it's still the place, and I finally, late in my career, had a chance to wrestle in the Garden, and I had a copy of the program insert, and actually I had another copy made up, and everybody that was on that card at the time was living and signed it. In fact, Sergeant Slaughter was in the main event that night against the Iron Sheik, and Greg the Hammer Valentine challenged Bob Backlund, who was the champion at the time, and I wrestled Tito Santana. Piper, Orndorff, and Dr. D. David Schultz were in a six-man with Tony Atlas, Rocky Johnson, and Ivan Putski. So I had all of those guys sign the program insert and a second copy, and I had it custom framed with a picture that I had taken years later with Tito Santana, and so I gave that to the hall since it was a significant moment in my career.
Awesome. Now, on YouTube, there are a lot of clips, obviously, of promotions from around the country, and there's a lot of up there of the Sheik's promotion, the big-time promotion, and I was watching a match with it was you and Arnold Skolin against the Hells Angels. Man,
yes.
And I kind of did some research on it, and I saw a story about the Hells Angels, and it kind of reminded me of hearing the story about the Sicilians in Chicago in the 50s of the Hells Angels in Detroit apparently did not like that and let them know about it. In that time, because I always think when I think the I Like to Hurt People Sheik and being only 35, I missed that time, so I only know that the Blood and Guts and the Sheik Burned It Out, you know, stories of that era, of that territory. But in the time that you were there, what was that promotion like? Because, again, it's very unique when you think of the you think shark cage matches and stuff like that, but obviously they did a whole lot of other things.
They did it all in Detroit back in that era. But, you know, I learned very, very early in my career to judge people not on the so-called reputations that may be circulating within the industry, but based on my own personal experience. And in my case, you know, it was always my dream to be a wrestler. And by chance, I actually started as a referee and was a referee while I was in college, 1962 up to about 68, 69. And there was a point where I thought that was as far as my dream would ever take me, and a chance meeting with the original Sheik when he came to the Northeast to challenge Bruno Sammartino, just in a passing conversation, you know, I told him it had been my dream to wrestle someday, and he told me, well, look, I run the promotion in Michigan, Ohio, you come out and I'll give you a chance, and he was good to his word. And so in 1968, I had a weekend, and my parents were living in Detroit at the time. My father worked for General Motors, and my first match was actually a tag match in it's a little town above Cincinnati. I think I would remember the name of it now. About 50 miles north of Cincinnati, Dayton, Ohio, and it was in a very, very small. I don't even know what you would call it. I don't even know that it was an official studio. There was a ring there and seats on just two of the sides, maybe two rows. And what was unique to me was Ernie Roth, who later became known as the Grand Wizard, was actually the guy on the mic doing the commentary. And I wrestled with a guy named Ron Sanders in a tag match against the Hells Angels, Golden Boy Dupre and Chris Colt. And the next day, that was on a Friday, and the next day I ended up going to Pittsburgh and had my first single match against Killer Kowalski on TV. And then back to Michigan, and the match that you're talking about took place on Sunday, so it was probably maybe my third match in my career, and it was the only time I was ever in the ring with the legendary Arnold Skolin, who I had known for years, and of course worked with later on when I was with the WWF, but it was he and I that night against the Hells Angels, and that's the YouTube video that gets circulated around a lot, and I kind of laugh because anybody that's had experience as a wrestler can spot somebody who's green as grass, and I certainly was. You're constantly tugging at your tights and doing little things that kind of give you away. But that was a very special match, and it's great that that I have a record of it.
That's great stuff. You know, everybody really. If you don't already have it, you got to get Wrestlers Are Like Seagulls. It, literally one of the best books ever written. And it didn't hurt, JJ, that you literally took notes throughout your career, and just being able to pull things up that a lot of guys really, they're just racking their minds to remember stuff. You were able to refer back to your journals.
Yeah, when you have a lengthy career, I went back to Florida a couple times. I worked Amarillo maybe three different times, and back to Charlotte. And you kind of forget with the passing of time when you met somebody, whether it was the first time you were there or second time you were there. And I kept these week at a glance books mainly for tax records. And just by dumb luck, as the years passed, each year I threw them in a box and kept them. And it was a running record day by day of, where I appeared. And I jotted down my match if I had a match. And a lot of people know me as the leader of the Four Horsemen, which was certainly the pinnacle of my career, but it was also just a snapshot of my career. And unless you've read my autobiography or a historian in business, you wouldn't know that I had, 3,400 and some professional wrestling matches throughout my career. So I've kind of done it all, and it was nice to be able to refer to those journals to kind of, help me recall some of the details and to be able to put them in my autobiography.
Sure. Do you still keep in touch with Vince McMahon? Has there been any talk about you going into the WWE version of the Hall of Fame?
No, if you read my autobiography, you would know that I resigned from there after 7.5+ years,
right.
And our relationship was very rocky at the time. But time seems to heal wounds in every situation, and certainly in that one too. But there was a 10-year period there or longer where I didn't see Vince McMahon, speak to Vince McMahon, and it was. Actually, when they released the Ric Flair and the Four Horsemen DVD, that I received a call from a TV producer and asking if I would, be interested in participating in it, which obviously I was for all the right reasons. But they sent a video crew to Delaware to tape about 6 hours of material, and so the clips that are in there were recorded at that time, and then another year or so went by, and when Flair had his quote-unquote retirement ceremony after the WrestleMania match with Shawn Michaels, I got a call from Howard Finkel like on Wednesday before the Sunday WrestleMania, just telling me that the idea was kicked around and would I be open to coming there. And I said I would, and I got a call back the next day and was on an airplane when WrestleMania was actually taking place, and was there in Orlando to appear live on Raw, and was there all day, did not see Vince during the day, and about 20 minutes to 11 while we were live, right before we went through the curtain, Vince was there with a headset on along with Stephanie and a couple of the other staff, including Jerry Briscoe, and that was the first time I saw Vince, and he stood up, shook, extended his hand, and said, thanks for being here. And I said, thank you for inviting me. And that was the only time we've spoken and seen each other since I left there in 1996.
Wow. Yeah, I figured with that appearance, maybe something would have repaired itself.
You know, anything is possible. I've also like another year went by, and I was invited to come to Stanford now for a taping session of their Legends of Wrestling roundtable discussion, and I've done three different segments of that. Of course, it's usually the day after they tape their TV, and again, did not see Vince, though I've come to their studio. In fact, I've got another appearance coming up in a couple of weeks, which will be my fourth time there, and I really, really enjoy going there to see you know, Gene Okerlund or Jim Ross and Michael Hayes, you know, guys that it's just fun to be around and to sit around and tell old stories, and we usually have a specific topic with each one of those things that we do, and then in post they put a lot of video and pictures in it to really make it a nice presentation. But it's fun to do one of those as well.
Right. Well, JJ, it's been a pleasure having you on with us again, and I want to remind everybody you can get more information on JJ and the book at jjdillon.com. And of course, if you got any or if you want any information or want to plan to attend the Professional Wrestling Hall of Fame in Amsterdam, New York, you can get all your information at pwhf.org. JJ Les did say he was sorry he couldn't be with you tonight, but obviously some really bad weather his way.
Yeah, we've had really, really tough weather patterns through an extended area there, and I certainly hope Les is a dear friend. Going back to the time that I broke into business, he was there and really helped me and guided me early in my career, and we've been friends ever since, and certainly I hope only the best for him.
Sure. And we will definitely try to catch up with you again down the road.
All right, guys. All right. Rich and Mike, it's been my pleasure, and again, thanks to the fans, and glad to have this opportunity to talk with you.
All right, JJ, take care, man.
Thank you, JJ.
All right, that's JJ Dillon, and we will be back on Ringside Wrap here in about 3 minutes.
Hi, this is Ronnie Wood of The Stones for Raz. You know it's okay to rock and roll and party, because I do it all the time. Just let someone else do the driving. That's what I do. Remember, rock lives, and you should too. Please don't drink and drive.
A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
If you're a veteran of Iraq or Afghanistan, like me, coming home can be harder than expected. But it turns out I wasn't alone.
At IAVA.org, there's a free online community of thousands of vets who've got your back. Whether it's managing the transition home or everyday stuff
like finding a nice sweater for my dog.
Sweater?
Okay, maybe not that. Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America is there for you. Join our community at IAVA.org.
We've got your back.
Brought to you by IAVA and the Ad Council.
You're listening to the GWH Radio Network, brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Your show will return momentarily. Did you know that there's more to GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com than just Georgia Wrestling History? It's true. Not only can you find documented cards, results, and more on pro wrestling in Georgia dating back to the 19th century, but you can also find out where live and local wrestling may be near you today, and not just in Georgia. We also cover the southeastern regional scene in Alabama, Florida, Tennessee, and the Carolinas. You want more? Well, we also cover the major worldwide wrestling and MMA promotions as well, including WWE, UFC, TNA, Strikeforce, Ring of Honor, and more. And so do our radio shows. You can find all of this, and maybe a bit more, by logging on to GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com, where we are capturing the legends of yesterday and covering the stars of today. GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com.
Hi, I'm Drew Brees, NFL quarterback for the New Orleans Saints, here with Bugs Bunny to remind you to get moving every day.
Because when you get moving an hour a day,
you fuel your body and your mind.
So what do you like to throw around the football like Drew?
Skateboard.
Play 50 in the park.
Ride a bike.
Kick the soccer ball around.
Or dance in your room.
Just move it your way.
Because nothing makes you feel better than moving every day.
And that makes you part of a winning team.
So be a player.
You'll have more energy to do the things you like to do.
Move it your way and be a player.
Get up and play an hour a day, Doc. Check out how to be a player at letsmove.gov.
Head online to get tips on great ways to get moving every day.
That's right, at letsmove.gov. Let's hear that one more time, Doc. That's www.letsmove.gov. A message from the Ad Council and HHS.
Don't let it slide, baby, diamond ring. If that diamond ring don't shine, he gonna take it to a private eye.
Back on ringside, Rap, Rich Tate, and Mike Sempervivi with you. Les out this week, dodging tornadoes. Hope everything's going well there in his neck of the woods. UFC 130 coming up this week. Mike, you want to talk a little MMA?
I'm not sure if I have the ability to talk. I realized very early on in this show when I called in at 7:59 and 59 seconds Eastern Daylight Time that it was not going to be a good night. And stammering and stuttering through an interview with James Julius Caesar Dillon, yes, it meant Julius Caesar at least, when I would open up that Inside Wrestling and he would have that open letter trying to get Tully Blanchard the match against Ric Flair, I guess it was 1984, I think it was, 85, I can't quite remember. Obviously, pre-Horseman, because 85. Blanchard, as the U.S. champion, was going after Flair and had his team, was right after, I believe, the team with Wahoo and JJ come up from Florida. And the fact that I stammer and stutter and have a pathetic time through a J.J. Dillon interview is very terrible for me. So I'm mourning this evening.
It probably didn't help that you had no idea who was coming on until we went to the break right before the interview. But, yeah, we didn't know for sure if J.J. was going to be on with us.
I'm a professional, damn it. I should do these things. But no.
Well, there you go. No, actually, we didn't even advertise JJ was going to be on. We were hoping he would. He was hoping he would, and it was really going to be kind of cutting it close as to whether he was going to be available at the time we needed him tonight. But sure enough, there he was. So we got him, and always good to talk to JJ.
Hopefully, I didn't waste his time too much. But and by the way, those clips to YouTube, you know, just YouTube, you know, put in the YouTube JJ Dillon, and it was kind of amazing when I saw it too, because it's like, who the hell are these guys? It's like I had seen Arn Skolin wrestle. The only stuff I think I had seen from him was WWF stuff that was like on the early Coliseum videos, I know, and some other like really random older stuff. But I had never seen, I don't think I'd ever seen the guy in color wrestling. And the clip is in color, and it's just, I didn't know it was the third match of JJ's career either. You know, it was early, but it's like, and it was third match early. Think about it. Watch Tough Enough and then watch J.J. Dillon in his third match. It's a large,
you know,
large difference.
You talk about Arnold Skolin, just a little piece of history here. Anybody going to GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com, hit up the fall of, I believe, 56. I want to say 56. May have been 57, but I'm pretty sure it was 56. Bobby Weaver. Look for Bobby Weaver in our results section. He was actually the first guy. That was Arnold Skolin. He was the first guy to ever hold the Southern Heavyweight and TV title at the same time in Georgia. So, yeah, he worked here back then. Yeah, little trivia. Anyway.
I'm a leech. Yeah, Tracy Smothers called Dave Meltzer a leech on the wrestling business, and we've heard, like, you know, that Eric Bischoff's threat. I am a leech on the wrestling business. It's thank God for J.J. Dillon and Les Thatcher and you, because I don't think anyone realizes, and as I was reading the Observer this week about Savage in Georgia, I was thinking about everything that you have compiled over the years and, you know, the guys tomorrow night, and just, you guys deserve a thank you all together, and I know we both thank Les, but you deserve a thank you for being able to be the start of doing these shows and having this network and all that stuff, and Larry obviously as well. How important this stuff is, and, you know, it's like just got J.J. Dillon on a random Tuesday night, and it's great.
Yeah.
Or
okay,
Wednesday
okay,
night.
Yeah, you suck it up. You're looking for a raise now, right?
But it's amazing, checks that, you know, with zeros on them, but just nothing in front of them. But speaking of that, speaking of not making any money whatsoever, I think that's the way UFC 130 is going to go. And it's amazing when you got Quentin Rampage Jackson, you know, coming off, obviously, his whole career and his whole history and the, you know, cachet he has behind him, and coming off the A-Team movie and the, you know, winning over Lyoto Machida, which was a big deal, even though a lot of people thought Machida won that fight. I think Rampage himself thought Machida won that fight, but the hype that was behind the Ultimate Fighter show and the fight ultimately with Rashad Evans, you think he'd have a little more, there'd be some more oomph to this, and he had a good performance on Monday night on the Clay Ferguson show, but I tell you, his match against Matt Hamill coming up on Saturday probably should have been the semi-main event, and they should have gotten Frank Mir and Roy Nelson out a lot stronger, a lot earlier, and a lot faster in selling this show, because I think it's obviously he was going to be down coming out of St. Pierre and Shields anyway, but I know technically Rampage Hamill is a, one could argue a top five, about between top five guys in the UFC 205-pound division. I would say top 10. And Hamill is, you know, 9 or 10 in that equation, and Rampage is in there, but it's hard to, you could argue he's not even top five if you wanted to. And I think Frank Mir, because of how much he can talk, and either you love him or you hate him, and even if you love him, he can make you hate him by the end of it. But he is very, he can run his mouth incredibly. And Roy Nelson, who, you know, Dana White hated having Roy Nelson on the Ultimate Fighter show. When he got the IFL contract, he had Roy Nelson, who is incredibly, I mean, he's got all the charisma in the world. He is a black belt in jiu-jitsu. He's an incredibly tough man, but just looks like a big old fat, you know, guy you'd see, you know, the beer belly and all that stuff. But he's Dana White hated having him on the Ultimate Fighter show because of how he looked and how, and there's a lot of people that actually say that because of how he looks, and God knows, you know, he doesn't use steroids. You know, God made him that way, he's looking that way. And that's just the way he looks. And he makes it work for him. He does a lot of great stuff with it. And, you know, because he did so well, and obviously he beat Kimbo, which was not a surprise to anybody who knew anything, on the Ultimate Fighter show. And just, you know, his wins coming out of this, and the fact he's just such a unique-looking guy. And he's, again, you got Mir and Nelson who could sell a fight. And why, as this thing gets closer, and there seems to be no buzz behind it whatsoever, except for your true diehards, I'm just, my mind is boggled that sucker didn't end up making up to be the top of the card.
You're looking for a response from me.
Well, you know, I need 1 second at least to catch my breath. I'm not in cornet mode tonight, at least not very good one. But, and again, this was obviously supposed to have Frankie Edgar and Gray Maynard too. And to be honest with you, even if that fight would have taken place, I can tell you this right now. My main event still would have been Mir and Nelson, with the semi-main event being Edgar and Maynard, because Edgar and Maynard proved in January that, again, no offense to them, you know, they're great fighters and, you know, everything, but with that, yeah, I love Frankie Edgar, but with that said, they're not selling pay-per-views like, to me, Nelson and Mir could have.
We talked about a little bit about it last week. I wanted to ask you a little bit about, is there any kind of update on Brock Lesnar and how he's doing or anything with him going forward?
No, I believe it's still the status quo right now with, you know, nothing going to happen. I mean, obviously the ball's already in place for Shane Carwin to take his place against Junior Dos Santos and ultimately winner of that getting Cain Velasquez in Houston, which is going to be, I think that's going to be a big, big show. Obviously, I mean, the thought of it, the possibility with Lesnar would have made it, you know, huge. But, I mean, Cain Velasquez and, again, that growing MMA Latino fan base that continues to rise and chip away at boxing, where boxing is a stronghold. I mean, it's going to be a big show, but Brock Lesnar is just flat not going to be a part of it. And even if they say he's okay tomorrow, it's still going to be a long time before you see Brock Lesnar back.
Speaking of Brock Lesnar, just want to remind or let everybody know, in case you missed it yesterday, we did have a news story up. Go to our news and notes section and the title, Sneak a Peek and Order Brock Lesnar's Book Here. Of course, Death Clutch released the book he's co-written with Paul Heyman. released this week. They've actually put the first 50 pages online for free. Go get those, and guessing based on what I've read so far, haven't read that whole thing, but from what I've seen, it definitely makes me interested in getting the book. So if you want to at least have a chance to kind of preview the book, go hit that story up, hit that link, and get that preview of those 50 pages and see what you can find out. And you know, anytime you order something through us, through a link at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com, you are helping support us as well. Want to remind everybody, too, one thing before we get out of here tonight, just so I don't forget it because it just came up. Dragon Gate USA's Mercury Rising pay-per-view debuts this Friday, I believe. Yeah, the 27th, that's Friday. Cable systems everywhere and the Dish Network. And we'll have another story up on that probably tomorrow, reminding everybody how they can get that and what's on it. That, of course, was shot here in Atlanta during WrestleMania weekend. Good stuff. Good stuff. You want to go see that. So let's see. What else is going on outside of that we were going to talk about?
Over the limit pay-per-view, yeah, on Sunday. You know, the Orton Christian match was awesome. And you would not expect that if you saw SmackDown on Friday. When you saw Randy Orton RKO, I believe it was Mark Henry, and then jump up in the splits, cheerleader splits, you know, touching his toes up in the air, very high up in the air, the man can dunk. He has up, so I'll give him that. The Cavaliers would take him in a heartbeat. But, you know, and his little fist pump thing,
yeah,
and everything.
Yeah, but then they wouldn't spend any money and put anybody around him, and 7 years later he'd go to Miami. So.
And, you know, he'd have to watch his mom around Delonte West. It's you know, but Antoine Jameson is begging for him to put himself, you know, out of his misery by getting RKO'd through a table or something like that if Randy went there. But, you know, obviously, well, you knew they were gonna have a great match. And that drove me nuts leading into this thing, because it's that they, my thing with Randy Orton is he should have been this guy that people loathe and hate, and obviously there's gonna be a fan base that likes him, but his whole thing was to be the Viper, be this guy who will attack you out of nowhere, and being an opportunist and a general douche, you know, not even a douche, but just, as you know, far more cold and venomous than that, well, obviously, but have his one weakness be his head. And they've kind of played to that where, you know, he'll get rattled and, you know, the concussion thing, and they've, you know, Triple H, they've done this stuff, and, you know, he usually will sell during a big match at one point, him really being stunned, like the lights aren't on, type of look on his face, and have that. And so this whole thing with Randy Orton and how he's booked as far as being so cartoonish, like, it was driving me nuts, and it popped into my head as before the match started on Sunday, and then almost immediately that was erased. I mean, Orton and Christian did an awesome job, and I don't know if that one match is worth $55, but really I thought that card was actually awful at the beginning, but the last hour pretty much saved it. Well, that and the Michael Cole getting his comeuppance was actually, they did a great job with that, I thought, too, because, you know, he came out, obviously, he had a note, like, you know, signed Epstein's mother, I can't wrestle tonight. The referee rips it up right in front of his face, and Lawler proceeds to kill him in 3 minutes. You know, unfortunately, they didn't do the pile driver. You know, they saw the outlaw on that, I guess, which is amazing. But, he gets wiped out. They have Bret Hart, Jim Ross, and Eve come in. And I thought that was great. And then the main event ended up being awful. But, you know, those two segments, you know, Orton and Christian and the Cole Lawler thing, actually, I thought were excellent. And, you know, Raw Monday night, I don't know, did you have a chance to see Raw on Monday night?
Yeah, I did, but I'm gonna be honest with you. Nothing really excited me much, except for the fact that we seem to be done with Cena and Miz, and we seem,
yes,
to be finally moving away from that.
Which, doesn't hurt my feeling.
Thing. Here's the thing. I love the Alex Riley turn. We knew it was coming. You knew it was coming. The thing is, now is he the kind of guy that can carry a program with the Miz and it actually work? I don't know that yet.
Well, he should be on SmackDown anyway. That's the thing, and that's, I mean, remember when they started getting Miz over in a new direction before, when he began rocking the suit and everything, he laid out Morrison when their team
right.
had broken up. And I guess in a way this was kind of the same way, but it's because of the way Riley has been portrayed and everything. It's such a, and the fact that it's so early in his career, it's such a junior version of it where, I mean, I assume he's going to SmackDown now, finally. It would make the most sense because, I don't really want to see Riley and Miz. I don't even want to see really Riley right now because I loved him since the first time he was shown on NXT. You know, when he just, like, looked over and he had the crappy jacket on, and obviously he grew up with his father as an announcer and everything, Kevin Kiley, and being a radio host and everything. So, you know, I was kind of happy going into it anyway, and he had the look and all this stuff. But he shouldn't actually probably be on SmackDown. And he shouldn't be on SmackDown in a way where he should go over there and be, you know, a super strong good guy. I wish they had a better developmental system, because it's not that I don't want to see Alex Riley. It's just that I would rather see him work the kinks out, because he doesn't, realistically, if you think about his experience and how long he's been around, he's got a lot to do ring work wise, but in this era of wrestling, he doesn't have all that many kinks to work out. You know, it's just a matter of just ironing out and getting a little bit smoother. And if he had just a year of that somewhere else and then he came back, can you imagine what he'd be? You know, it's like Brock Lesnar. I mean, you talk about the book and everything, the I Want Wrestling Diary. By the way, Brock does an interview with Dave and Brian today on the website. But the IWantWrestling.com website that Lagana does, he talks about Heyman, kind of how he ended up, or Taz ended up saving Brock Lesnar as far as a direction on what to do with him. And you think about, he and Shelton Benjamin were a team in OVW for a while. And Randy Orton was down there for a while, and these guys were. So it's like, I wish Riley had a place to go like that to get those kinks ironed out, because he's going to go over to SmackDown and nothing's going to happen. And then we're going to be talking about, Jesus, why can't they build new stars? And again, I hope it doesn't work out that way, but I just feel like it's probably going to work out that way, and it's too bad, because that dude pretty much has almost everything except for the fact that he hasn't been a wrestler for a long time.
I didn't get a chance to see Tough Enough. I saw the last 5 minutes of it, so I know who got kicked off. But your thoughts on the show this week? Since we've been making a habit of that?
Well, Stone Cold is awesome. I mean, you saw the best part of it when he busted, and Big Andy is crying or trying to hold it back, and he's pissed off, and Austin just, my daddy digs it, and you know, the ha ha ha, you know, I'm funny, yeah, that's right, I'm funny, and I'm Stone Cold Steve Austin. And it just was like, the show is fantastic. It really, really is. And The Rock being there to work with those guys, and obviously I'm sure it was partially for him to get loose going into WrestleMania and stuff like that too, because I believe it was filmed, you know, around that time or in the lead up to, in the month, you know, kind of lead up to it, that episode was. They had a chance to go out there and cut promos, and it showed. It made you wonder why Christina Crawford, why she was actually still there. And I guess her work was really that great. Now, I know he brought it up again when she was, when he put her belt up, that her work was strong. But she's incredibly pretty and everything, but it was like she had nothing. And it was so incredibly embarrassing. It was absolutely embarrassing.
Too. You got that,
Jesus.
Too, because I'm sorry. When I was watching her in the ring, I'll be nice. She didn't look good. I was more sold on, what was her name, the girl that got cut before her? The guy. Yeah, yeah. She seemed to have it a little more together.
It was like,
so I wonder,
she looks. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Rich.
So I wonder if she had not gotten hurt, would she have outlasted Christina, at least for another episode? And what we also have to remember here is this is reality TV. So, you know, they're not necessarily going to be cutting. I got to, you know, we know they're cutting and keeping people based on what they can do with them for a few more weeks. Can they get more ratings out of this guy for a couple more weeks? You know, that's obviously the way it works.
And you figure all those guys, you know, there's a good chance that, you know, most of again, when it comes to her, Alicia Fox is her sister, and I'll say this, she seemed to have far more potential than Alicia Fox does in the ring, who, she's like Gumby. it's amazing in the way she can bend and look like she is getting, I don't know how she can walk, because it looks like she kills herself doing anything, and she can make anything look painful, like falling out of the ring. It's just, oh, God, so she looks better than that. I can give her that, but, well, they already got her there, so you know, obviously don't need Christina there right now. But it's also coming to the time where I feel bad that Jeremiah is probably not going to win this thing, and that he could be, you know, I cannot see him winning this thing. I don't know, maybe I'm still thinking that there's going to be a little Daniel Pewter thing and everything like that, but they keep going out of their way to say how dangerous he is and how bad he is. And realistically, he hadn't trained with Dutch Mantel for that long. It was only a little bit. You know, but it's too bad because of the way he can cut a promo and how relaxed he is and how unique he looks and the fact you know he's a tough bastard. It's, you know, and obviously the teeth flying out of the mouth on the first episode was, you know, that set the tone for how great this guy could be, you know, as a badass cartoon character, you know, even in this era of WWE. So it's too bad that he won't be there right away or something like that. Or not that he won't be there right away, that he won't win this thing because he's the guy I'm pulling for. But by his performance, I would shelve the MMA career because I swear he'll make it. I don't know how he fights, but he would actually make me a great wrestler. Can you imagine him in the Briscoes as like the crazy inbred cousin or something like that from Papa Briscoe's wacky night hanging out with, you know, JJ could have locked him up in the Delaware jail that night. Who knows what could have happened, but
beautiful.
He actually has Jeremiah Briscoe. How fantastic is that?
Beautiful. You should be booking. That is perfect. That is perfect.
And I don't know. Look, it's not going to be Andy, and it's probably going to be Luke, and it makes the most sense.
All right, let's start wrapping this thing up. Let's do that before we actually decide we need to feel the need to talk about TNA.
No.
What you got to plug this week?
Adam Summers and I probably are going to be recording tomorrow night, Thursday night, the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare at the WrestlingObserver.com website. And I believe Friday, Brunken Ed in San Antonio will not be hosting his show, the Over the Top Rope Radio Show, because he will be in Las Vegas with the rest of the Cinca fans that suck up to Brian and Vinny and all those other guys, Dave. And I'm only saying that, Mike Sawyer, I'm only saying that because I can't go. But he'll be in Vegas for the Figure Four convention and everybody going to see UFC 130 at the MGM Grand on Saturday. So his producer / co-host, Cotrera. And I will actually be filling in, or I'll be filling in for Ed, which will be a grand improvement for that show. And we'll be talking Mid-South and UWF, actually. We've been wanting to do a old-school show about Mid-South because he was a big fan, and I was a big fan. Again, another one of those shows that came on Channel 54 when I was a kid, and I was always enthralled with Mid-South and the UWF. Still, obviously, I'm partial to Crockett. And I saw more WWF in a lot of ways because of where I live, but I was probably most influenced by Mid-South. So I'm going to be doing that on Friday here at blogtalkradio.com. It's the Over the Top Rope Radio Show. I believe it's going to be 9 o'clock Eastern time. And then Saturday, I'm not sure what I'm going to do. If I can find another radio show to shoehorn myself in on, I will be doing that. And on Sunday, Wrestling Observer Live with Brian Alvarez on the Sports Byline Radio Network. Go to WrestlingObserver.com usually and check that out. 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Sirius Channel 92, I believe it is. Yeah, so there you go. I think that's enough.
So a light week for you this week. Taking a little vacation. I want to remind everybody, as always, you can check out, keep your eyes peeled for Les Thatcher to show up on PW Insider with doing an audio on Thursdays with Mike Johnson and Saturdays with Doc and Will over at Wrestling Observer. And still no word yet on this Pro Wrestling Revival seminar he was going to be doing down here that got postponed and moved out a month or so. Haven't got any details on that yet. Hopefully Les will be back with us next week. Let's see. I want to remind everybody that even though we don't want to talk about TNA here this week, we will mention that Glenn Gilberti, Disco Inferno, will actually be on tomorrow night's episode of Impact Wrestling. You want to check that out. It's funny because Mike Norris, our host for the Peach State Pandemonium show on Thursdays, he took a trip down to Columbus with me a few years ago when Jerry Oates was running GCW down there, and Disco was hot down there. And Mike leans over to me, and as Disco's doing his intro, he leans over to me and he says, "Man, he has made that intro, that cheesy intro, work for like 20 years." And you know, literally he has. And he is a great worker. He is like damn good in the ring. But clearly, this is probably a one-shot thing. I don't think you're going to be seeing any more of him as they go to tape next week. Let's see if I got everything in here. I believe so. Want to mention that Peach State Pandemonium will not air tomorrow night. They will return next Thursday. So that's going to do it for us here this week. Les, if you hear the archive, we hope everything comes out okay. We will talk to you between now and next week. Mike, see you here again next Wednesday.
Yes, sir.
All right.
We thank you for listening to this broadcast, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com and the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GWH for nostalgia, upcoming events, the latest news on pro wrestling and MMA, and more. GWH thanks you for your support.